You better come on in my kitchen. There's hard to be raining her door.
Come over here, kid, will you, sir? You never know, you might have to cook for 20 guys someday. You see, you start out with a little bit of water, and you fry some garlic.
It's
and you throw in some tomatoes, tomato paste, you fry it, you make sure it doesn't stick. You gotta do a boil, you shove in all your sausage and your meatballs. Huh? And a little bit of wine. A little bit of sugar.
Delicious.
And that's my trick.
When the moon hits your eye like a big pizza pie, that's amore.
Enough. I'm so sick and tired of hearing you people talk about food, food, food. That's all anybody ever talks about is prosciutto, cheese, and fava beans. I'm drowning here.
Jesus Christ, take it easy.
We're not even engaged yet.
When you're married, you'll understand the importance of fresh produce. Potatoes,
yeah. I eat with gusto, damn your bet, my country, 'tis of thee. I eat for social progress, I eat for victory.
Good evening and welcome to Mouthful, One Country's most delicious hour. Happy New Year, too. I haven't been here for 2 weeks, 3 weeks. Hope you've had a lovely start to 2011. I have, not counting getting stuck on the freeway going to L.A. Took a little longer than it should have, but it was very interesting to see a part of California that I'd really not seen before. I've never driven over the Tehachapis through the town of Tehachapi and the town of Mojave. It's a little nerve-wracking when there's nothing but snow and ice and bumper-to-bumper traffic, but it was very interesting geographically. Anyway, it is good to be back. I'm looking forward to a delicious year of a mouthful. Couple of things I want to tell you before I introduce our guest, and that is in my column in the Press Democrat, my Friday column, Mouthful, as well as on my blog, Eat This Now, at the Press Democrat website, I've started a new weekly feature, and I'm going to try to find some way to tie it in with Mouthful as well. Not quite positive what that's going to be yet. It might be a short two-minute feature each week. It may be something a little different, but it's called The Hidden Gem Farm Stand. I started it last week, and what was the first one? I'll think of it in a minute. The second one was Rose and Thorn. That was this week's hidden gem, and it's really a great little place. It's out on Highway 12 between West Sebastopol and Freestone, and you've probably seen it whenever you're driving out that direction. It's a gift shop. There's all kinds of stuff you'll see, like all kinds of, I don't know, iron sculptures. And if you look really closely, you'll probably see some chickens. And there's a sign that says gift shop. But what most people don't know about it is that those 70 hens that you see running around, and there are amazing breeds. I saw chickens this afternoon that I did not know existed. So gorgeous. When practically came up to my waist, I think, and another one was so tiny, but it was fully grown. They sell the eggs of these hens. The eggs are $5 a dozen. They are definitely from Happy Hens. And tomorrow is the last day that Rose and Thorn is going to be open for 6 weeks. They're taking a winter break. They will reopen in March. But I'm not telling you about this just to pique your interest and then say, but you can't have it. The owner, Carol, takes a break, but the hens do not. And so she will be in town, and she will be selling the eggs. And all you have to do is you can go to roseandthorn.com. You can go to my blog, go to the Press Democrat, click on blogs, and then go to Eat This Now, and you'll see a hidden gem of the week. Rose and Thorn, just get the phone number. All you have to do is call, leave a message. She'll check messages daily. Call you back, find out how many eggs you want, how often you want them, and then she'll tell you what secret place she'll stash them in while she is on break. So if you haven't made the leap to really great eggs yet, something you should do in 2011. Once you have started using wonderful eggs from Happy Chickens, it's impossible to go back. It enriches your life on many levels. So that is the week's hidden gem, and watch for it appearing in some form sometime soon on Mouthful. Now, speaking of gems, we have returning very recently. I think Victoria Wise has a record for how quickly she has become a returning guest. Victoria was here just a few weeks ago, I think 4 weeks ago almost to the day, with John Harris when we talked about John Harris's new book, Food Doodles, and the whole history of the Berkeley Gourmet Ghetto. At that time, I asked Victoria if she would come back to talk about her book, which I love, The Armenian Table, and she generously said yes. And here she is in the studio with us, along with her husband, Rick. Welcome back.
Thank you.
It's so good. I was so happy when you said you'd be willing to come.
Oh, why would I say no?
Oh, because maybe you didn't want to drive up from Berkeley in the winter.
Well, I just ignored that part.
Okay, good. I'm glad you did. And I have to say, if I was the sort of person who believed in past lives, I would probably have to say I spent at least one as an Armenian, because there's something about Armenian food that has... It just seems so natural to me. I look at some of the ingredients, lots of lamb, cracked wheat, yogurt, especially yogurt in a savory context, mm-hmm. pomegranates, walnuts. These are just the foods I grew up on and the foods I still eat today. So
but you're not Armenian.
Not that I know of. I don't think so. That's why I say, you know, if I believed in past lives, I would think that. But no, I even think these are foods I ate when I was a child growing up in the Bay Area. Not necessarily because my mother ate them. I sort of found ways.
Okay. I'm a little bewildered here. I'm trying to, you know, sort of sort this out. You're not Armenian, but, and your mother didn't cook them, but you ate them in the Bay Area.
Well, I grew up in a small town in the East Bay, mm-hmm. and I remember my first pomegranate. I got it when I went trick-or-treating. Mm-hmm. This guy, I could take you to his house today. I know exactly where it was. He had this beautiful, weird-looking thing. And I put it in the bag with the candy. And he had a whole camera set up with a tripod and everything. And he was taking everyone's picture. And I got home, and that was what I was most excited about. And it wasn't there. It was not in the bag.
Oh, no.
The next day, I found it on top of the refrigerator where my mother had hidden it because she didn't want me to know about them because they were too messy.
Oh, well, they are. She's right about that. Yes. Absolutely right about
yes.
that.
And
but who cares?
Who cares? They're wonderful. And so I've been eating them ever since then. And at some point, I also discovered lamb, which my mother didn't like, but I managed to get her to make lamb for me.
You know, the Armenians believe that in the Garden of Eden, it was not an apple that was the downfall. It was a pomegranate.
I've heard that before.
And why not? I mean...
Yes. Absolutely. You can sort of look at a pomegranate.
I think a pomegranate is more exotic somehow.
I think so, too. And there are beautiful apples. I don't want to diminish apples as I elevate pomegranate.
No, certainly not.
But when you cut open an apple, it doesn't look like a geode. It doesn't look like you just discovered a cache of jewels, mm-hmm. and a pomegranate does.
Yes, it does.
So, I bet you grew up Armenian.
I grew up half Armenian.
Half Armenian.
Yes, only half.
Which half?
My father was Armenian.
Uh-huh.
So, on the paternal side. My mother was Scotch, Irish, Dutch, German, Northern European from the southwest of the United States.
Okay.
So, that's a pretty, you know, it's probably a regular mix, but putting mm-hmm. the two together, somehow it just worked. They were married forever until mm-hmm. my father died, and then my mother was still married to him until she died, mm-hmm. actually.
I have to say, one of the things that I really love in the first part of the book where you write about your family, where you write about the Armenian table, there's a picture of your mom and dad on their wedding day, March 13th, 1944. I love this photograph. There's something about
sweet?
It. I just love it.
And her wedding dress, which was not a wedding dress, it was a navy blue suit. It was wartime, actually. Mm-hmm. It was during World War
II.
44. My father was... a military man, young, very young, with wings, And he and my mother fell in love in a photo shop when he took in a set of some film to have processed so that he could give pictures of himself to his mother.
Oh.
And that was it. I mean, that it was go from there.
And then how long did he spend?
And she was only 18.
She was 18. He looks really young, too.
He was 6 years older, so 24.
Okay. Did he stay in the military? Did he make a career of it?
Yes, he was a career military man.
And what branch of the service?
The Air Force.
Air Force.
Yeah.
You said wing, so.
Yeah, the wing. He was a pilot during the war. And after that, he went to the door. He went into accounting. Actually, the funniest thing is, you know, this food story is so long in my life. We went to Japan when I was 4 and a half, and my father was in charge of the mess hall, and my sister and I used to get to go into the little place where they had all these darling baby chickens and pick them up and love them. And I just thought that was just the most wonderful thing in the world.
Yeah.
And you know, and there was food. He helped manage the farms that were there.
But this was in Japan.
This was in Japan. But then he decided he didn't really like doing that. And what he really liked was accounting, of all things.
Uh-huh.
And that's how he spent the rest of his life.
So he left the military and became an accountant.
Exactly. Although he did retire from the military, oh, maybe 15 years before he died, but during that time, or before he retired, but during that time, he was in the civil service.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when, as an accountant, and that's when he and my mother moved to Germany to have some fun in Europe for a while as they were aging.
So, they sound like great parents.
They were just great parents. They were wonderful parents, and food was one of the major things in our lives.
And was a focus of that Armenian food? Did your mother really? No, it wasn't. Okay.
No, it was very much Armenian food.
Oh,
I mean,
okay.
we had the icons and the celebrations, and we grew up with shish kebab and fasulya and bulgur lamb kuftas, and my father always insisted that he was going to be the one who would get the lamb leg, bone it. They ground it themselves in the kitchen.
Uh-huh. One of those cranked?
Yes, exactly.
Yes, I still have my mother's.
So that it would be done, you know, just right.
Mm-hmm.
And then on the other hand, we also had lots of tacos, lots of enchiladas.
Now, where was this?
Wherever we were.
You moved.
We moved all the time. Okay. Yeah. I grew up moving around the United States and Japan and Hawaii.
Oh, really? Mm-hmm. Okay. So tacos, enchiladas, and what was that influence from?
The Southwest. My mother was from the Southwest.
Whereabouts?
Albuquerque, New Mexico.
Oh, okay. That explains all that. So for somebody, let's do two things. Let's start with geography. For somebody who says, Armenia, I'm not going to tell anybody, but I don't quite know where it is.
Nobody knows where it is.
Okay.
Especially when I was growing up, nobody knew where. I mean, it was just no. And still, I run across people today in Berkeley who don't really know where Armenia is or what it is. When I was in high school, you know, and I would have friends over, we would have lamb chops and artichokes, and they would be epiphanized. They had never even had these things.
That's the food of my childhood. Lamb chops and artichokes.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And it was just like, we were so exotic. Mm-hmm. I never thought of myself as exotic, but in retrospect, I think I was
To middle America,
mm-hmm.
You were.
And that was in Omaha in particular, because we lived in Omaha when I was in high school.
I still meet people today who never saw an artichoke. Never saw an avocado until maybe they were in their 20s or 30s and mm-hmm. came to California.
Mm-hmm. And no lamb chops, for heaven's sakes.
No.
And I don't know why in the Midwest you'd think, I mean, I'm
there's
sure.
There's parts, I was very surprised, even today, there are parts of this country that do not eat lamb. My younger daughter lives in Mississippi. She cannot buy lamb.
Does she want to?
Yes, desperately. In fact, one of their holiday presents was a lamb. I will get them a lamb in the spring and either send it or take it to them.
Send it or take it. Hmm. I'm having all kinds of pictures in my mind.
Well, I'll have it processed and wrapped up. No, I'll have it processed and wrapped up. And, you know, unfortunately, it'll have to be frozen.
Oh, definitely.
To last them for a while. So.
But that's kind of okay. It's better than no lamb at all.
It's absolutely better than no lamb at all. So where was Armenia?
Armenia is a small country that is between what is now modern-day Georgia in what used to be Russia, and Turkey.
So it's eastern Turkey, right?
Yes, and it sits right between Georgia and Turkey, and then it abuts Syria and Lebanon. Mm-hmm. So there's all kinds of those influence. There's the Turkish influence, but from the north there was the Caucasus influence. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of the I don't know how to explain it, the sort of heavier, less Mediterranean aspects of Armenian cooking, which are delicious, and I love them all. Armenia is, I guess, still, and now again, even though it was subsumed into Russia for many, many years, they've regained independence.
They have regained. So there's
and they're very proud. They're very,
there's
very
an
Armenia,
proud. Armenia today.
There is an Armenia today.
Okay.
And they're very proud of their heritage. For one thing, it is considered by Armenians that Noah's Ark was part of their Mount Ararat, which is now in Turkey, is supposedly where Noah wound up, you know, sitting
on top of
rocking across a pinnacle with all of the things in his boat. And they consider that part of their. It's also right near within the Tigris-Euphrates Valley.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a very lush place.
Mm-hmm.
Have
you been there?
Things can grow. No, I have not been there. In fact, I just read an article from CNN Living the day before yesterday that some archaeologists have discovered remains of wine that leads them to believe that Armenia was the first place.
I've read about this recently.
Wine was actually produced. Mm-hmm. It was a very rich area. I mean, and they had, you know, there was copper, and there was pottery, and there was apricots and walnuts, and it was just a very rich area. But then they got taken over, just like things happen around the world.
Yeah.
But then they came back.
They came back, and that's a good thing. Now, I want to move into the Armenian cupboard, because that's a section of the book, the beginning of the book, that I really like. But before I do that, these beautiful dolmas?
Sarmas, we call
Sarmas,
them.
Sarmas, okay. I figured it would be a different name. Mm-hmm. Beautiful stuffed grape leaves. They're sitting across from me, and there's a bowl of what looks like very thick yogurt.
Yes.
Can we
Which
eat?
Which I made.
Oh, you made it.
This is from, I'm very proud of this yogurt, and I guard it with my life, practically, because it's a starter from who knows how many generations before in my Armenian family.
Oh, how wonderful.
And so I make this yogurt all the time because I can never, ever let it die. Mm-hmm. So the starter is here from way, way, I don't even know. I mean, you know, I'm sure a lot of it's exaggerated. People like
but
to exaggerate.
Okay.
But that's okay. We can have you know.
Hundreds.
They brought it over on the boat.
How often do you have to make it?
I make it once every, I don't know, about 3 weeks. It depends on what I'm cooking and you know.
So to keep the starter going, you have that window.
Yeah, exactly.
I remember when I was very young and very ambitious, I bought a yogurt maker. And if I remember correctly, I had to make it like, I thought I had to make it like every 48 hours.
Oh.
I probably didn't, but I didn't know enough. I was following the instructions exactly.
Yeah, no, you don't.
I had so much yogurt. I was giving away so much yogurt. I finally ended up quitting because I just could not keep up with it.
You were overwhelmed.
Yes.
You were overwhelmed.
So tell us how you make, tell me how to taste. Let's start there. Pick one up and dip it in?
Yes, actually. Just pick one up. And this is yogurt that has, I put a little mint in it just to be sort of, you know.
Oh, you were picking one up. Eat
I'm
with
not
me, please.
Eat it and
You're
chew
not?
While I'm trying to talk.
Well, describe what I am eating while I talk.
You are eating a grape leaf stuffed with lamb and rice and dipping it into yogurt. And in Armenian cooking, these are called sarma. which is different from dolma. Dolma are stuffed vegetables, like the zucchinis and the peppers and the tomatoes, and they make the difference. The sarmas are little goodies like this that are stuffed in leaves.
And Rick to the rescue with a Kleenex. Thank you.
Anyway, sarmas are leaves. The leaves is a wrapping rather than a vegetable.
And how do you prepare the lamb?
I prepare it not like my father did. I buy ground lamb.
Okay.
But it's not easy to find. I have a few sources that are satisfactory. It has to be finely ground lamb. It has to have fat in it.
Yes.
It has to be, you know, well raised. Mm-hmm. And all of that stuff. So my source at the moment is Prather Ranch Meats.
Oh, Prather Ranch, yes.
Yes, which I shop at regularly at my farmer's market.
Uh-huh.
I'm lucky to have them just blocks from my house.
That's great. That's great. We get good lamb at farmer's markets here, too.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the things that seems to me increasingly farmer's markets, at least in the Bay Area, become great sources for good protein.
Oh, absolutely. Meat, in other words.
Meat. Yes. Well, meat and also, to some degree, seafood. I buy almost all seafood at farmers markets.
Do you? We have one at our farmers market, but I haven't been. We haven't been so happy with them.
Uh-huh. We have one guy who's really fabulous, but he's available only from May through November. Then we have another good source that, you know, it's a great place for Dungeness crab. For example, it's a good place for Manila clams too, but we digress, as we always do on Mouthful.
Yeah,
well, that's a very good, tell me again the word.
Sarma.
Sarma, not Sharma. Sarma.
It's a charming sarma.
There we go. And the yogurt is tangy and it's really lovely. Tell me how you make it.
Okay, this is interesting. I make it with my starter. First of all, what I do is I take a half a gallon of organic whole milk. I put it in my microwave for 17 minutes, and that's all the time it takes to form a skin across the top. You don't have to do it on the stovetop, and it's really great because it doesn't, you know, you don't have to watch that it's going to get burned on the mm-hmm. bottom. You don't have to scrub a pot afterwards. It's an absolutely delightful method that I worked out. I take it out. I let it rest for 25 to 30 minutes until, and I use a thermometer for this, until it's exactly 100 degrees.
Okay.
And at that point, I take some of that warm yogurt and a quarter cup of starter, and that's all that it takes.
Quarter cup.
If you put in too much, it gets, I don't know, it sort of overreacts.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't like it. You gave it too much. It needs to be gently encouraged to re-ferment.
Mm-hmm.
And so I warm up the starter, the quarter cup of starter, with a little of that milk, stir it in there, and then I do just what my Armenian relatives have done for centuries. I put it on the counter, and I wrap it in a blanket. And that is absolutely the perfect way. And I let it sit there for 6 hours, and then I unwrap it and put it in the refrigerator overnight.
And in the morning, is it yogurt?
It's yogurt when I put it in the refrigerator,
okay.
But it's still a little loose.
Uh-huh.
It needs to set overnight.
Uh-huh.
And then what I do, because I like, you mentioned that it's thick, creamy yogurt.
Mm-hmm.
I like it really thick.
Mm-hmm.
So I drain a lot of
you
the
do.
Whey off.
You mm-hmm. drain.
Mm-hmm. Which is a little bit, I don't know, a little bit extravagant, I suppose, but makes awfully good yogurt.
I drain whey off as well. Now, I also see you mention and work with yogurt cheese in the book.
Yes, I love yogurt cheese.
Yeah, so
that's another really mm-hmm. well. It's also extravagant. So what you do is you have to drain not just the whey, but then you have to drain more and more and more and more for usually 2 days
mm-hmm.
until it's almost cuttable.
Mm-hmm.
Not really quite cuttable.
Almost like cream cheese.
Like cream cheese is a good analogy.
Especially
yes.
if you get the cream cheese that doesn't have gum added, like the Gina Marie cream cheese. It's sort of like that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then there's a picture here. And we should say, Rick Weiss, your husband, is here in the studio with us. I notice there's not a microphone on him, but he took the photographs that are in the book.
Yes.
And here's one of them, yogurt cheese balls marinated in garlic dill oil with Aleppo pepper.
That's a good one.
You can tell from looking. And it's just, so you drain the yogurt.
Yeah, for 2 days.
For 2 days. And then.
And then you just roll it up. Mm-hmm. And then I marinate it with a little bit of garlic, a little bit of olive oil. Some. Do I have dill in that picture? I can't.
Yes.
Yeah, and dill. And serve it with, the Armenians serve it with cracker bread, which they call lavash. Mm-hmm. And I have a recipe for making lavash in there. And my Armenian relatives always made it.
Made their own. They didn't go out and buy it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is it hard to make?
It's no harder than any other thing of that sort.
Sort. Right.
You know, as long as you put your mind to it, you know, you're baking. You're making pizza or you're baking bread or something. It's a different part of cooking for me.
Mm-hmm. For me, too.
But if you decide that you want to be, you know, fancy and have a really fun thing to talk about with your guests, it's not mm-hmm. hard.
Yeah. I've always wanted to make crackers. One of these days I'm going to make my own crackers. I just haven't had a
chance. It is. Lavash is basically a cracker.
A cracker. Yeah. Yeah. I thought I'll enter into that world and then I'll just be making them. Making
forever.
It at home. Yeah. 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 I don't think it doesn't sound hard.
It's
just
not
one
hard.
More thing to add.
You just have to roll the stuff out and, yeah. you know, and you get flour all over the place.
Mm-hmm. And we're going to take a little musical break here on Mouthful and come back with more talk about the Armenian table and this very wonderful book. It is one of my favorites. Yes, it's Mouthful, the Wine Country's most delicious hour. Thanks for tuning in this evening. My guest, Victoria Wise. Victoria, I loved our conversation with John Harris so much that I replayed it last week.
Did you?
Yes. I found it really engaging just as a listener. And I know that you and John and I think Alice Medrick, mm-hmm. Joyce Goldstein.
And Bruce Idell.
Bruce Idell. So mm-hmm. you're going to be doing a talk on the 30th of January.
At Books, Inc. on 4th Street in Berkeley.
And what time does that talk take
Five
place?
5 o'clock.
5 o'clock. Mm-hmm. Okay. What day of the week is that?
The Sunday. 30th.
It's a Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
It's a Sunday.
So you can get from Sonoma County, you can certainly get down there for the talk without worrying about traffic.
Pretty much.
You don't have the commute traffic that during the week.
Not at all.
And how long do you expect the talk to last?
Oh, gosh. Let's see. I did it a few weeks ago for my book, Sausage. And that was a whole panel of other people. It went on. There were a lot of people there, and it went on for maybe an hour and a half
uh-huh.
with, you know, a lot of good audience response mm-hmm. and people asking questions. So about that.
Okay. Well, I'm determined to get you up here to do it here sometime this spring. I'm going to work on that. But in the meantime, if you want a preview, January 30th at Books, Inc. in Berkeley. And I will be writing about this in my column, Mouthful, so you'll be able to check it out there, too. You don't have to write down all of the details tonight. Now, during that musical break, I came across a couple things, and I will confess, I have not tried them yet, but I'm very intrigued by the concept. Armenian moussaka with yogurt bechamel.
Mm-hmm.
Now, yogurt bechamel, what a fabulous concept.
Well, it is. And, you know, there's no reason actually not to use yogurt in a bechamel. When you think about it, I mean, it's milk. I use yogurt in a lot of things as a replacement for milk.
Mm-hmm.
And let's see if I could think of something else right now that would be good, but I can't. The bechamel is the main one,
mm-hmm.
and it makes it just a little bit tart.
Yeah, a little. It's got that tangy acidity, yeah. which is so
just
refreshing.
A little bit, though.
Mm-hmm. And you don't do. I look at the recipe for the yogurt bechamel. Is so similar. You've butter, flour, yogurt, salt.
Yeah.
Nutmeg.
It's the same old thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I also make that in a microwave. It's just no reason not to because, once again, the microwave will heat your milk and and it will thicken it, and you don't have to worry about cleaning a pot. And also, it's just so quick.
Yes, there's speed. I will confess, I don't have a microwave.
It's time to join the 21st century.
I have a very small kitchen. And I've just never really found the room for another appliance in my small but efficient little kitchen.
Well, I cook so much, as you can imagine. I mean, I'm
of course
a cookbook
you do.
Writer.
Yeah.
And I make up stuff and I cook everything. And so I've found a microwave an exceedingly handy appliance to have. Mm-hmm. And I use it for all kinds of things. I use it for candy making. I use it for jam. I would never make a pot of jam on the stovetop ever again.
Really?
The same reason, because it just saves so much in terms of...
Can you make marmalade?
Oh, totally.
Oh.
Absolutely. And candy. Peanut brittle, for heaven's sakes.
Really?
I don't remember if the peanut brittle recipe in this Armenian book has instructions for the microwave, but I think it must, because that's the only way I ever make it. And so every Christmas, I make up batch after batch after batch of peanut brittle for holiday gifts, and people just get really happy about it.
And you do it. Wow, that is a real absolute, speaking of epiphanies, that's an epiphany for me.
Well, I'm a great believer in appliances. I absolutely adore appliances. I adore machines.
I adore that. I couldn't live without my immersion blender. I think the immersion blender is just one of the greatest things ever.
I don't have one of those.
Oh, you must.
So, I'll borrow your immersion.
I have two immersion blenders. You can have one.
Okay, good. You can't have my microwave because I only have one.
Yes, no, I wouldn't expect it. Let's go back to the Armenian cupboard. We've talked about yogurt. We've talked about pomegranates. We've talked about lamb. There's a lot of other things in the Armenian cupboard. We have nuts. A lot seem to be... walnuts, is that correct?
Walnuts, mainly.
But also almonds, pine nuts, and pistachios.
Exactly. All of those.
We're going to deviate again. Have you heard anything about what some people are calling pine mouth syndrome?
I have read about that. I've never had it myself. I don't know. Apparently, what is that? It's apparently pine nuts that are coming, imported from China.
China.
Have something that can cause...
What it seems like it is there's been such a huge demand, and there are two or three types of pine trees in China that are not traditionally used. The nuts are not traditionally used as food, and they're adding those in.
Yes.
And in what is claimed to be a small percentage of people, it creates this bitterness. And it's very interesting because it's not based on contact. The pine nuts taste fine when you eat them. And it's been happening to people, isolated incidents, and people haven't known what it was, because what happens, about a day to 2 days, enough time that you forget you've eaten a lot of things, all of a sudden, there's this bitter taste in your mouth, and it doesn't go away. And in some people, it's very intense, and everything that they eat tastes bitter. And other people... the bitter taste is in their mouth except when they're eating. So it will turn wine bitter maybe, but other foods, especially intensely flavored foods, hot foods, salsas, that sort of thing, won't taste bitter. But as soon as the food's gone, it's bitter. And, I mean, people have thought they've had brain tumors. People have thought all kinds of things. And it happened to me.
It happened to you?
It happened to me about...
Oh, good heavens.
It happened to me about a year and a half ago. And it's like... well, this is something I really need to ignore because it's so big and so frightening. And for about 5 days, I thought, well, is my career as a food writer over? Is somebody going to discover? Because nothing tasted properly. And I thought, well, this is just really scary.
Well, how'd you get rid of it?
It goes away.
Just eventually subsides.
It just goes away of its own. And it lasted about 10 days. And then all of a sudden... it just wasn't there.
Yeah, but how unpleasant.
It's very unpleasant, but then I forgot about it until somebody wrote me an email asking about it, and I did some investigation, and I realized, figured it out, I had eaten pine nuts. I'd feasted on pine nuts a couple of days before this happened, and people all over the place are getting this.
Well, pine nuts from China, not pine nuts from...
No, not pine nuts
from South
America. Domestic.
Right.
though they're, you know, China's sort of taken over the market. It's mm-hmm. really hard to find pine nuts that are not from China these days.
Yes, I know. That's true.
Yeah.
That's
so true. Anyway, just when I saw pine nuts, I thought, oh, pine nuts. Let's talk about pine nuts. So we have nuts. Walnuts, the most important. Seeds. Tahini.
Tahini.
Tahini. Talk about the importance of tahini to Armenian food.
Well, you know, it's not as important as it is, for instance, in Turkish food.
Mm-hmm.
But since my relatives came from Turkey because they, I don't know why they left Armenia. I honestly don't remember that far back. I haven't heard that story. But they were Turkish. Mm-hmm. And they were expelled from Turkey during the Armenian genocide, basically, and that's how they wound up here in 1912. And so they brought tahini with them, probably.
Okay.
But I don't think that there's tahini in the Caucasus.
Okay. And tahini, of course, is just a paste. It's sesame. Ground sesame.
It's sesame paste, uh-huh. Yeah.
And it can do wonderful things to yogurt.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Stir a couple teaspoons of tahini into yogurt. You lick the bowl when you're done with that.
Yes, that's true. Or you could just, like peanut butter, just stick a finger in and lick it.
Oh, yeah, and I like it much better than peanut butter. Dried fruits, dried apricots, of course, but also figs, dates, prunes, plums, raisins.
Mm-hmm.
And they're elements in, not so much in desserts, but they're elements in savory dishes.
They're elements in savory dishes, and that's one of the things that I find fascinating in my own development as a cook. When I first started cooking, I couldn't stand the idea of putting fruit into a savory dish. And as time has gone by, I've become more and more enamored with that idea. So I guess in a certain way, I'm returning to my roots.
Mm-hmm. What about the apricots? What are some of your favorite things? I love dried apricots. I'm just curious about some of your favorite or some of the classic things you do with them. Traditional.
Well, one of the things to do is to just have dried apricots that you cook in a simple syrup with a dash of almond extract to make something like almost like a spoon sweet, like a Greek spoon sweet,
mm-hmm.
where the apricots are still whole halves, and they soften and they become almost jam-like, and then you have those with yogurt. That's one of the most divine combinations ever. And then, you know, any kind of tagine or stew, lamb stew sort of thing, apricots just really go. And I must say, I seriously prefer American apricots that I get at the farmer's market over imported Turkish apricots. Mm-hmm. I think they have a lot more character. They taste more like an apricot.
Yeah, I think so too. But I learned that from my daughter. My daughter has a passion for dried apricots, and she said, "Mama, you got the imported ones. I really want the ones from California."
Yes. And they're more expensive.
Oh, yes. Quite a bit more expensive, but they are really good. Let's see what else. Herbs. What are some of the herbs? We already know dill. We would assume mint.
Dill, mint, and parsley are almost the whole repertoire of herbs in Armenian cooking. Mm-hmm. They just don't use herbs. And in fact, they almost don't use many spices. Now, when you get down to Turkey, you're getting, you know, some spices, some Mediterranean spices. Mm-hmm. But still, not so much in Armenian food. And I don't know why that is. I don't know why. I just know that, you know, my father couldn't bear to even have parsley on the table. We finally convinced him otherwise later in life.
Did he not like the appearance or the flavor?
The flavor.
The flavor, okay. Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Because he was so used to eating food without
herbs. Uh-huh. And then certainly salt. What about pepper? I mean, every cuisine uses salt. But I know Aleppo pepper is...
Aleppo pepper is very special. It's from Aleppo, which is now in Syria. It used to be in Armenia. And it's a red pepper. It's kind of, I describe it as somewhere between a paprika and a chili flake.
Okay.
And it's not at all strident. And it's kind of almost vegetable-y tasting. And it's very, very aromatic.
Mm-hmm.
And it's more and more widely available now. I mean, you can find it online. You can order it online. Yeah. And you can get it at all, you know, all of the Middle Eastern shops.
Yeah. I have some. I think mine's from Zingerman's, if I remember correctly.
Do you use it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like it. And it is really fragrant. I like that element of it. And then what? Speaking of fragrant, you'll also use the extracts, the orange flower water and rose water.
Mm-hmm.
Which are two ingredients. I find them fascinating. They're fun just to take the lid off and smell.
Yes. And those really are seriously used in Armenian sweets. I think rose water, for me, rose water is a little hard to love. But I really like it when it's mixed with walnuts in a walnut brittle.
Mm.
And mm-hmm. orange water, it's... Orange water you can carry around a little. It goes with more things, mm-hmm. I guess I should say. But both of those they're pretty heavy. Mm-hmm. You only use a drop at a time.
Oh, yeah, just a little tiny bit. We have a place here in Sonoma County that makes really incredible rose water. They have hundreds of Bulgarian roses. And they just, you know, they extract the oil and they distill it. And they have a limited amount of rose water. And it's actually nice in a chocolate truffle.
I would think so. I would think so. And I would think a fresh one like that might be very good. I haven't ever had one that's that fresh.
We will try to get you some with the next production.
Okay.
And then sour alum. I'm going through the book. I'm going through the chapter on the pantry or the cupboard. The sour element, something I always think is one of the most important and interesting elements of any cuisine.
I agree.
What gives the acid? Is mm-hmm. it lemon? Mm-hmm. Is it something else? So let's talk about that from the point of view of Armenian cooking.
Well, in Armenian cooking, tomato is one of the main things that gives the acid. And, of course, they didn't have that until the New World and all of that. But just like everywhere else in the world, the tomato is adopted as... I can't live without ingredient, basically. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the main things. And then the other thing is lemon.
Lemon. That's the top of my can't live without list.
Not lime. Not vinegar so much. Uh-huh. Once again, Armenian food doesn't have that acid taste very much. Uh-huh. Pomegranate.
Pomegranate mm-hmm. certainly has a sour element. But lemon. And then not much vinegar. What role do grapes play?
You know, they might have a verjus sort of thing, but I don't know about that.
Uh-huh.
I think grapes play the main role as wine.
As wine. Don't want to waste them on anything else.
Exactly. And for their leaves, for mm-hmm. sarmas.
And then, let's see, I'm trying to think. Geographically, olive trees grow there.
Yes.
Yes. Olive oil is important?
Yes.
Yes.
But not so much as it is, for instance, in Greek cooking or Italian cooking. Once again, you know, all of these kinds of flavors are subdued in Armenian cooking.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. What if you were to have to describe Armenian cooking to somebody who did not know anything about it whatsoever, and you were allowed a couple of sentences to give them sort of a sensual impression?
No. Lamy, bulgari. Bulgur wheat is a major ingredient in Armenian cooking. Yogurt gives the acid the tart taste also. Uh-huh. But it's, you know, it's not the largest vocabulary of food tastes uh-huh. of any of, you know, there are lots of cuisines that have a much wider range.
Uh-huh. Now, what about seafood?
Nah.
No, not a huge
not
amount.
So much.
Not so much.
I mean, you know, there are lake fish, Lake Van, which is one of the hugest lakes in that part of Europe.
Uh-huh.
But, I mean, that's fresh water. It's not like they have, you know, tons of shrimp and tons of mussels and...
Yeah, well, they're not on a major seacoast.
No,
so,
they're not.
Yeah, it makes sense that you wouldn't see that very much. I was just sort of curious. And then one of the things that you have, what about potatoes? They're such a staple. And you think of potatoes as a staple in mm-hmm. certainly Russia.
Mm-hmm.
So how does that figure in?
I think it fits in. For instance, that Armenian moussaka, I think, don't I have potatoes in it? I think I do. But that's kind of an innovation of my own. Mostly it's bulgur.
You do.
It's bulgur wheat and rice are the carbs.
Uh-huh. And then you have a potato and chickpea fritter. The tahini paste, that sounds really, really good.
Chickpeas are another one that are very common in Armenian cooking.
Mm-hmm. And what are some of the traditional ways those would be used? Would they be used in larger stews? Would they be more on their own?
I think in larger stews, not so much on their own. Uh-huh. Not you know, like a plate of chickpea salad, which I would do.
Yeah, you see that, say, in Indian food sometimes, Indian cuisine.
Right.
Sometimes.
Right.
No, dish I love.
It's more background.
Okay, so just more as the slow cooked. I'm getting the impression in part slow cooked stews with rice, with bulgur, with that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. Dried fruits.
Yeah. Not a lot of sautés. Not a lot of fried food.
And then when it comes to, you know, this, our hour together is going really fast. I just looked at the clock. I can't believe how much time has passed. What about the sweet side of the Armenian table? What sort of desserts?
Well, the sweet side, baklava. And more baklava.
And some more baklava.
More baklava done with pistachios, done with walnuts, done in twisties, done in layers. Done every which way. A few cakes. The walnut cake that's in the book is really delicious.
I just say it wasn't peanut brittle with rose water. Mm-hmm. It's walnut brittle with rose water.
Walnut, yes.
Yes, just came across that. That sounds really interesting. And tarkana. Tell us about tarkana. This is something I don't know anything about.
Boy, how can I describe tarkana? Tarkana is like an ancient granola bar.
Oh, okay.
It's very dense. It's chewy. And when you eat it, you just feel like you're connected with some previous time and that you're doing yourself so much good health-wise. Mm-hmm. And I don't think anybody makes it anymore.
No.
I made it because I wanted to do it for the book. I wanted to include it because it's such a, you know, it's an old thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Just looking at the recipe, grape syrup or honey, bulgur wheat, cinnamon, cloves, nutmeg, ginger, allspice. It reads like an old recipe.
It is an old, but it's delicious, actually.
Uh-huh. And it made me think back, and I don't know if I'm going to remember the name. It starts with an S. It's like Sakarni or something like that. The yogurt cheese dessert.
I don't know that.
I will send you a recipe. It's the drained yogurt. You basically, you make yogurt cheese and you add, oh gosh, you add sugar. I think there's a lot of chopped dried fruits, saffron, black pepper, and a number of other spices.
I'm loving it. I love black pepper in sweet things.
Oh, I do too. I will send you that recipe. I came across it when I was working on my book, Salt and Pepper.
And, I have that book if it's in the book.
I think it's in the book. I found it before I wrote the book. I hope. I'm pretty sure it's the
I
think
it's the last recipe.
I think it's the last recipe. You wouldn't know this. I think it's the last recipe that I gathered when I was working on the book. Mm. This walnut brittle with rose water just sounds fabulous and simple.
And you can make it in the microwave.
You can make it in the microwave.
But you don't have one.
Not that I
what
can tell you,
you
how. Well, we'll see. I can go to any friend's house. And
yes.
They will have one.
Most likely.
You never. The only time I started thinking about a microwave, I think about it every morning when I'm warming portions of my dog's breakfast in another. I thought, I wouldn't have a pot to clean if I were heating this in a microwave.
That's absolutely true.
And
but
I bet
don't
that
know
he couldn't
why do you warm the dog's breakfast?
Oh,
to be rude, but I'm curious.
Well, I figure it must taste better. He is a dachshund, and obviously, and you have to watch the weight of a dachshund
mm-hmm.
because they have that long spine.
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
if they get heavy,
mm-hmm. yeah, not good for their back.
Not good for their spine, and they can end up paralyzed, and it's very expensive to do back surgery and all that. So I fortify his dog food with cooked vegetables.
Mm-hmm.
And so mm-hmm. if I haven't prepared vegetables in advance, or even if I have, I still warm them.
We do that with our dog, too.
Okay.
To keep his weight down.
Yeah.
He's a calf. And
he's a what?
A Cavalier King Charles Spaniel.
Okay.
One of those cute little things.
Cute little, yeah.
And he could get fat.
Yeah.
And we feed him zucchini. He gets his kibbles with mm-hmm. half kibbles and half zucchini. Just
okay, yeah.
for that very reason.
Yeah.
Dogs can be vegetarian, I guess.
Yeah. Well, they need some of the stuff they get from meat. They definitely need some of that. But Joey likes carrots, zucchini, and broccoli, and so I vary things, and I mix it with his canned food, and then a little bit of kibble on top for interest.
Well, you're awfully good. We don't heat Rocco's zucchini. We just mix it in with the kibbles.
He probably would rather.
But
I
we
do.
Put olive oil on it.
Well, there you go. There you go. Anyway, we could obviously talk for. Oh, here's yogurt panna cotta with cherry sauce. Cherry, now are cherries another?
Yes, that's another one. Yes, I should have thought. Yeah, cherries definitely are part of that world.
Yes, and here you have yogurt in a panna cotta, and a good panna cotta is just such a thing of beauty.
I think so too.
Yeah.
And once again, like the bechamel, the yogurt makes it just that little extra zing.
Mm-hmm. Here, walnut spice cake, soaked in orange honey syrup.
I highly recommend that recipe.
That sounds really good. Now, tell me about the availability of the book.
Well.
And may I have another?
Please, help
one
yourself.
One of these while
these
you're telling me.
These are for you. Well, the availability of the book, unfortunately, it's not all that available. The publisher recently decided to, that they weren't going to reprint it. And I've looked online and it's an amazing story actually, because I found online that you can find the book, but you have to pay a whole bunch more money. So I asked somebody like at eCookbooks, I would say, how many copies do you have for? Why are they $35 instead of $30? Because it's hard to find. So I wrote this to the publisher, but I unfortunately was not able to turn their heads. So if you find a copy, pick it up.
I understand. But keep checking. I buy a number of my books on Amazon. I mean, sometimes I'll see a book and it's like $40 for 6 weeks, and I'll go back and there'll be an influx. I bought a case of one of my books. They paid like $2.50 a copy, and I sell them as extremely valuable archive copies.
Oh, definitely. Most definitely. But Amazon doesn't have this book except from individual booksellers, and I don't like to order that way because it costs so much money
to ship it,
and
sure.
You know, you only get one at a time.
Yeah.
And
well, that's what I did. I mean, I'll tell you my secret. I found a publisher, one of the independent individual booksellers on Amazon, mm-hmm. who seemed to have more than one copy, and I called them.
Oh,
and they made a
smart.
Separate deal with me.
Oh, that's
so
smart.
I only paid for the shipping of a case.
Cool.
So we're writers, you know. We write books. You got to be creative because it's brutal out there right now. It is absolutely brutal. We've only got a couple minutes left. What are you working on now?
I'm working on my blog, for one thing, which I just adore doing it because it's like I'm my own boss. I mm-hmm. just think up stuff and I consider it an exercise. It's like practicing the piano.
Mm-hmm.
It keeps my writing skills tuned.
How often do you write?
I have to write something every day.
Every day.
Even if it's just a couple of emails.
Mm-hmm. But I mean, how often do you do a blog post?
About twice a month.
Oh, twice a month.
Yeah,
okay.
I'm trying to do it twice a month.
Uh-huh.
But that, of course, comes in, you know, in between other things.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm working on a proposal that's called The Energy Savvy Cook. And it's about cooking with energy efficiency, using all of those appliances that you don't have. Like the microwave and the pressure cooker.
I adore my pressure cooker.
Oh, good.
I adore my slow cooker. And then there's my immersion blender.
And yes, okay, well, it's using all of those things and saying how this can actually help with saving energy in the kitchen, which is the most energy-using room in the house.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that sounds interesting. So you're working on the proposal, you're working on the book?
I'm not working on the book because I haven't sold the proposal.
Okay, so you haven't sold the proposal yet. Mm-hmm. You're like me. Yes, no, I don't write a book until it's sold.
Well, you can't. I mean,
I know people who do, and it's like, no, that's not the way. Get the money first, then write the book.
Well, I mean, I have to because I have to eat while I'm writing the book.
I understand completely. Well, we could just talk for hours. Hurry up and sell that book so that I can get you to come back.
Okay.
Or maybe we'll get you back up here with some other sausage people, and we'll talk about your new sausage book.
Or you can get me back up here when my next book that's coming out. In the winter, called Bold Food.
Bold Food. I like the title. Tell us about it.
And it's a huge tome, and it's about American cuisine and how it came to be. Lots of demographics, lots of stories about the people who came here.
Interesting. Bold Food. Who's publishing it?
Workman.
Workman. Excellent. And on that note, we have to say goodbye. Victoria Wise, The Armenian Table, more than 165 treasured recipes that bring together ancient flavors and 21st century style with the photography by Victoria's husband, Rick Wise. Thank you for being here in the studio with us, Rick, and for getting Victoria up here yet again. Meet me back here next week for another yummy episode of Mouthful, the Wine Country's Most Delicious Hour. I hope that we're going to have the folks from the Victorian Christmas tree farm in Sebastopol, which has expanded in some really interesting ways. In the meantime, you can always send me an email at catsmilk@sonic.net, or you can go to my, or both, you can go to my blog, Eat This Now, at the Press Democrat website, and make some comments. Have a great week. See you next week here on KRCB.
Mouthful is hosted and produced by Michelle Anna Jordan. Lawrence Alberti is Mouthful's engineer. For more information about Mouthful, send an email to catsmilk@sonic.net. That's catsmilk@sonic.net. You can also download Mouthful's free podcast at krcb.org or from iTunes.
And the moral of this story, children, it is plain but true. God knows if a preacher preaches long enough, even he'll get hungry too, and he'll sing too.